WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
A private school voucher plan leaves the Indiana State House in 2011 and accelerates rapidly across the state, picking up students along the way and eventually becoming one of the nation's most expansive school choice programs. Now, the state's traditional public school system, meanwhile, has been chugging along for some 170 years. Lately, though, it's been slowed by tight budgets, the loss of students to private schools, and most recently, the COVID-19 pandemic. So, when do Indiana's school choice program and its public school system collide? And what happens when they do? Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll do our best to solve that most vexing of story problems. And if we can't arrive at an answer, we'll at least show our work in hopes of getting partial credit. So don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to talk about the latest push to expand Indiana's school voucher program are Republican Representative Bob Boehning of Indianapolis, chairman of the House Education Committee, and author of one of the voucher measures that are stirring debate this session, Democratic Representative Vernon Smith of Gary, ranking minority member of the House Education Committee, Betsy Wiley, president and CEO of Hoosiers for Quality Education, and Keith Gamble, president of the Indiana State Teachers Association. Thank you all for being here. This is going to be a lively discussion, and I said before, it's education's a topic, but you don't have to pretend you're in a classroom, so jump on in. It's been about a decade since we had the first students enrolled in voucher programs, about 2,500 or so, I think, initially after the 2011 session. So about a decade now to assess. So paraphrasing Ronald Reagan, Bob Boehning, are Hoosier school kids better off now than they were a decade ago?
I think clearly if you look at the data, it's pre-COVID. Now, COVID's had a huge impact on everything. But pre-COVID, overall academic performance for all students actually improved in the last decade. So I think competition challenges all of us to move a little bit differently and to think of life a little bit differently. And obviously, we've looked at a lot of data, student performance data, parent satisfaction data, a lot of that has shown increases in terms of overall performance for our kids.
So you'd go so far as to say if it weren't for the voucher program, our scores might not be where they are today.
You know, it's hard to, you can't necessarily isolate, it's difficult sometimes to isolate, but I think there's no question that parents have definitely exercised their opportunity for choice. The largest choice option in the state of Indiana is public-to-public choice. Which is actually exceeds both charter and vouchers together almost. So, yeah, I think parents, just like anything else in life, we all would like to have the option to send or to buy what we want and at the store we want. And I think education is no different. You know, higher ed is, we don't all go to IU or Purdue. There's a number of non-public universities across the state that we all have a number of parents and students have chosen to attend. So I think K-12 education is very similar.
Representative Vernon Smith, jump in here. I'm guessing you might have a different assessment of the past decade.
I would not indicate that it has made, the vouchers have made a significant difference. And there are reasons why I say that. First of all, if a private school has a number smaller than 10, we're not holding them accountable with the testing. So we don't know what kind of feedback, what kind of achievement those students are making. And then when we look at the voucher program itself, it started off for those kids that were at risk, those students who needed it the most, and we expanded it now. So those students, I think, that were achieving and had chose to go to a private school, many of them are already at private schools, are still achieving. Those students who weren't achieving and are going there, I think they're falling further into the cracks. I just think that we have fractured public education in the state, and we need to get back on the same train, going in the same direction, making sure that we're holding everybody accountable, that we have standards that are applicable to every institution of learning. I'm not so sure if we're doing that. So I don't know if we really have a true measure of the effectiveness of charters, although we see more data relative to charters, but certainly there's a lot of ifs and questions about vouchers.
Betsy Wiley, the representative, said this program has fractured public education. Your take on that?
I don't think so. I think there's options now for families. And to Representative Banning's point, we want options when we buy things, when we shop, when we go out to eat. Parents want options for their students, right? And in the pandemic, we find that even more so. They're more engaged in their child's education. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all model when it comes to education. Every kid learns differently. We all learn differently. And we're fortunate to be in a state that has options and has a plethora of options. And so to make those available to Hoosier families so that their child can get the best education and the best learning environment for them, I think that's a uniting factor, not a divisive one.
And I'll be fair, I'll go all the way around. Keith Gamble, you'd be disappointed if I didn't ask you the same question.
Certainly. I think what we have to recognize, as we have removed money from our traditional public schools, we have had teacher salaries that have plummeted to some of the lowest in the nation, certainly the lowest in the region. That has proven through the governor's pay commission report.
And you attribute that largely to the funding that has gone elsewhere?
Yes, we have moved funding away from our public schools. And so it has been the 95-96% of Hoosier students who have had to pay the price in order to have vouchers that has removed money away from their classrooms.
Yeah, you mentioned, Bob Banning, public-to-public choice is more popular even than those parents and students who go to parochial schools and so forth. If that's such a popular option, why not just do that and keep it all within then you don't, quote-unquote, fracture, you don't have the diversion of money. Why is that not an option?
Parents choose for a variety of reasons. I mean, clearly, some is value-focused, faith-focused. So only making that as the only option is really not necessarily opening it totally up. Plus, the one thing you got to remember, choice when you're doing district to district, many times our choice schools are located within a community and within a school district. When you're talking about choice, public school choice, you are actually commuting or have to figure out a way necessarily that may be more difficult than getting into a charter school or a local choice school inside of that specific school district. To Mr. Gamble's point about diverting money, the one thing I think you got to remember is that if all the non-public school students that are in our voucher programs today were returned to our public schools, we actually are going to have less dollars per pupil available to educate kids, because the property tax dollars that their parents pay does not flow into the non-public school. And in fact, we only put a maximum of 90%. The average right now, although the House Bill 1005 would change that, but the average right now is only about 75% of what the state general fund appropriation is, follows that kid to that non-public school. So it's really not factual when you say that money has had a direct impact on teacher salaries, because if we would flood all of our traditional public schools with those students, there actually would be less money available per pupil.
Keith Gamble, respond to that.
Yeah, every dollar is important, and we have seen the critical mass that is occurring because salaries have been so much suppressed that we have classrooms now that are exceeding what parents would wish for their elementary students. And we see, especially in our rural areas, high school programs where they're not able to offer as many courses as they would like to, often because they can't attract or retain folks within their school district. And to simply say that we've diverted money, but that money would not make an impact, I think you have to follow where the dollars are going and the critical impact that it does have on education.
And we have to keep in mind, and Representative Boehning probably knows this probably better than I do, and can correct me if I'm in error, but we have to understand that as the state took on the authorization process of issuing charters, if I'm not mistaken, they're getting the rebate, the 3% back, so they're saving money. They've saved with virtual education. They've saved a lot of money, even with the vouchers. When we add all that up, that pie that could have been available for the traditional public schools would negate what Representative Boehning said. I think that we have to understand that we can only cut a pie into so many pieces before you can't say I had any dessert. I didn't even get a taste of it. I got a crumb of it. And that's what we're doing. I firmly believe that we're fracturing public education and that we're not seeing the results from it. You know, I think that certainly we ought to be creative and think of better ways of doing what we're doing, of educating our children for the general welfare of this state and this nation. But at some point, when you see that the results are not there, I think it's criminal what we're doing to our children. And parents want the choice because it creates hope. You know, I'll take my child out of here because I don't like the behavior in that school, or I don't like the programs in this school. I don't like the fact that my child's not achieving. Or sometimes I've had conflict with the teacher, conflict with the administrator, so I leave out and I have this choice. So it gives them hope, but I think it's a pie in the sky because it's not delivering what the advertisement says that it delivers.
Bob Boehning, I saw some head shaking going on, so I'm guessing that means you have a thing or two to say to Representative Smith.
Well, first off, I won't correct Representative Smith about the charter school fees. The administrative fees are up the maximum of 3%. Those go to the authorizer for administering those school. I don't see that as a shift at all. And I mean, it's just the cost of. Not much different than a cost of a local school district having a administrative offices that are taking some percentage of the dollars to pay superintendents and all the assistant superintendents. I would argue, I think actually Representative Smith makes a great point about why parents make choices is because of the fact sometimes it's academic, sometimes it's they want smaller class sizes, sometimes they want you know, the faith, as I said, or values. I mean, they make choices for a variety of reasons. Behaviors in the school that force, they feel like their kids are not safe. A perfect example is, I'll bring up, is if you look at the data on the last iLearn test, and think about iLearn. iLearn is a test that was created by Hoosier Educators based on standards that were developed by Hoosier Standards. And we're basically saying our students need to perform at this level as a demonstration that they're ready and for foundation skills to move forward. IPS, African-American students, the last time they took iLearn, only 6% of them passed both sections of iLearn. I personally think that's almost criminal. That means 94% of those kids didn't pass what we consider basic proficiency. I would argue, to represent Smith's choice, The charters in Indianapolis actually were three times that, which is still nowhere what I would consider acceptable, but at least it's three times better than what they were receiving in IPS. If you're a parent, would you not feel some need to look at options?
If I had 94% of my students weren't failing, I have to look at what was happening within my practice about this, and was the assessment correct? So if you are looking at only 3% of African Americans that are passing a test, you need to go back and take a look at that assessment to see what type of bias exists inside that test that may be causing us to find false results on that evaluation.
To that point, if you go back...
Don't worry, Betsy. I haven't forgotten you.
To that point, you can go back and look at data and look at other communities where African Americans have scored much better. In fact, you know, there's been a lot of research. The Mind Trust has been looking at this here in Indianapolis, and they will show you comparisons. So there is clearly an emphasis on trying to make sure that we meet the needs of all students.
That is not the case in Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana is oversaturated with charter schools. There are more of our students that are in the charter schools than there are in the traditional public schools now. With the fact that Gary has had financial difficulties, they have not been able to build new structures or to make the repairs that they should. A lot of these parents are choosing these buildings because we've got leaky roofs. The room, I'm not dissatisfied with the achievement of my students. I just don't want my child sitting in a classroom where there's 10 buckets, you know. And so they're moving there, but they are not achieving as well as the traditional public schools in Gary. That is the case in Gary. Now, I don't study IPS system to the degree I imagine that my colleague here looks at it. But we need to keep that in mind.
And I'm going to give you get an A+, Betsy Wiley, for patience in our classroom. So that's a core Hoosier value. Which is it? Is it an instructional problem here? Is there an assessment problem here? I mean, I've heard several points made that, or is it neither?
You know, I'm not an assessment expert. I know a number of people think that there is bias in the assessment. I think Mr. Gamble brings up a great question and is something that we should always be reviewing, right? It needs to be, whatever assessment we use needs to be fair for all students who are taking it. And I am a strong believer in assessment, right? I think we need to know how our kids are performing this year more than ever, right? There's some bills to not have any you know, any ramifications of that, but just get the data so parents and educators know how our kids are doing right now. You know, Representative Smith talked about charter schools in Gary, and they do actually educate, you're right, more students than go to Gary Public Schools today. But again, the data shows that they're academically outperforming Gary Public School students, right, in terms of growth. And that's phenomenal. And for those families and those kids, that's working. And again, I think that's what choice is all about, and that's what we applaud.
We keep talking about choice, and that's the nomenclature certainly that's been around here and elsewhere in the country. Does every student have choice, though? I mean, what about students with learning disabilities and so forth? A private school isn't obliged to take that student, right?
They're not obliged to take the student, correct? Although, if you look
at public school, would arguably.
Well, but the public school under federal law is required to provide the services. So a non-public school can take that child, and then the public school is responsible under federal law and receives the money on a state law to provide those services.
Generally, doesn't happen, though, right?
But you find a disproportionate number of kids. When she talked about the majority of them in charter school, the special needs students have a disproportionate number in the traditional schools,
right.
And we're still testing those students and holding them to standards and so forth.
And that may,
the achievement level totally of the whole school corporation. For example, we had at one point, that's not the case in the last year, we had Gary schools, we had 12 at that time, one that had an A average, one had a B, a couple C's and some D's and an F, but the school corporation as a whole had an F grade. You know, even though some schools had better grades than the whole school corporation. Now, with the takeover, with the MGT takeover, the state takeover, all of our schools are F schools in Gary. And so the state has come in and said we can do a better job than what you were doing locally, and they've done a worse job.
Well,
and so people are going to take the choice. They're going to get away from that.
Well, over the past 10 years, as you've all articulated, you know, we've gone from this pilot program, 2,500 students now, to probably the largest, most robust school voucher program in the country, or one of the top voucher programs. So where do you go next? I mean, this is sort of I know the answer because you've got legislation, and that's a way of saying, what is it you want to do this session that you haven't been able to do so far in building what has become the largest program of its kind in the country?
Well, number one, we're trying to make it more available to more individuals. We have heard from a number of families and parents who said, hey, you know, I am right on that edge. I need help. I'd like to have an option to have choice too. So we're raising the income level from 200, maximum right now, 200 to 225 year one. And 300%.
And that's of percentage of federal poverty level. So to put that in terms, that's like $140,000 for a family of four,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct.
And this, all these concepts were created to meet the needs of children in poverty, minority children who weren't achieving, but especially children in poverty. And now we're up where people can make, you said $140,000. I heard testimony there was $160,000. That is, those parents already had their children in private education, and we're funding it now. So what we're doing, once again, is taking money from traditional public schools, and we're funding private education.
So I would argue. Really quick on that, you know, this idea of sort of taking money from schools. I mean, I think Indiana has long had the policy that we fund the student and money follows the student. We're investing in that child's education. And so if they go to a traditional public school, the one that they're assigned to, the money goes there. If they go to a different public school through public school choice, the money goes to that school. If they go to a charter school, the money goes to that school. If they happen to get financial aid through the voucher program, it goes to the private school that they choose.
That is a facade. That is a smokescreen, because what happens, the money doesn't follow the child. The money goes to the school on the count day, and the second count doesn't count. They claim that they can't track students, but the bill that Representative Bain is authoring this year, they're going to say if you get that child, that scholarship, I don't know exact terminology, the ESA, once you get that, they're going to track you. With the technology we have today, on a monthly basis, we could track students. Public schools are required to take these students back if they're kicked out of those charter schools, and then we don't get any money for it. It's unfair.
The irony of this legislation is the original intent of the scholarship 10 years ago was for minority and low-income students who the only school they had to go to was one that was deemed as failing. Now, those very students are the ones who will be paying for students who are already going to private school, whose parents have the means to send them to private school. And it is diverting needed funds from 96% of Hoosier students over to another system in which their families have already made the decision they're going to be in private school and they're going to stay in private school. The LSA report showed that their prediction on this is that the majority of the families that will take advantage of this have already made the decision to attend private schools, and they have the means to do that.
So this is a bonus in your mind, a windfall of sorts that they're going to go to the school that they had already intended to go to and have it paid for largely.
I disagree a little bit with the premise of why the voucher program was created 10 years ago. And having been in the governor's office when that legislation passed, I don't think it was done for low-income minority students in a failing school.
It wasn't.
Because failing schools wasn't even a requirement for students to go.
Yes, you had to be in a failing school.
No, you did not. When House Bill 1003 passed 10 years ago, you had to meet your income requirement, and you had to have tried a public school for a year.
It didn't have to be a failing school.
I mean, that was added in as actually a failing school. If you were in a failing school district, you didn't have to attend that school at all. If you were in a failing school district, you did not have to meet that one-year requirement. So it was an actually.
But that was added in post-2011.
Well, we can debate legislative intent, but you're the architect of it. So what did you – is what has happened what you intended to happen? Was that this kind of growth?
I think we've talked about growth. The bill has – I mean, actually, if you look at choice over time, we started in 2011 with the bill where it was just free and reduced lunch, which is 100% of free and reduced lunch, up to, I think, 150%. We've expanded it over time. What's happened is we've got more and more Hoosier working families, like a nurse a firefighter who are saying, hey, I would love to have this option for my kid. And like I said, people make choices for a variety of reasons, and it was never intended just specifically for failing schools.
But you know, the governor's budget had a slight increase this year for the biennium. And the original language in this bill, over half of all new funding would go to this one pet project, 4% of Hoosier families, and it would have the impact on 96% of the choice that families make.
I predicted this would be a lively discussion. You did not disappoint me. I'm sorry, we're out of time. You know, the school bell's ringing somewhere, and I know some of you have some places to be. You've been very gracious with your time and your expertise and your sentiments on this very high-profile and very important topic to Hoosiers. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Bob Banning of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Vernon Smith of Gary, Betsy Wiley of Hoosiers for Quality Education, and Keith Gamble of the Indiana State Teachers Association. As the rest of the country gears up with alternative fuels, will Indiana find itself stuck in a coal mine? A high-energy discussion on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight and its sister publication Indiana Education Insight, both part of Hanna News Service. All right, Ed, heard lots of facts, figures, arguments. Make sense of all that.
Is that possible, John? I'm not sure that I can. I'm not sure that anybody can. But, you know, we've gone now for long enough that, you know, a lot of this debate is certainly not new, but we've got a lot more data to deal with. But the problem with the data is the details. And we've got a lot of other things that have kind of sprung up around this. We've got the charter versus voucher debate. We've got virtual schools now, even before the pandemic. You've got the ability for students to transfer within public school systems and from one system to another. And you've got the special ed problems that kind of complicate the funding formula and the follow the student principle. So, yeah, it's a very difficult thing to make sense of.
Much of the data are probably now skewed by COVID. I mean, we'll have to start almost over again, won't we, to get some solid data?
And there are some questions about whether testing this year is going to be valid, what kind of testing we ought to have. Superintendents are starting to weigh in on this and ask questions about how valid the testing can be and how they can prepare students for it. But, you know, another problem is that the governor, you know, said some things at the beginning of the session about the public versus voucher school issue in his State of the State address, and kind of indicated that he was on both sides of the issue. You know, he had friends on one side, friends on the other, and he stood with his friends. He said that we wouldn't fund the new voucher schools at the expense of public schools, but he's kind of been sphinx-like since then. He really hasn't elaborated on that, and we're not sure what he meant.
So no more clarification as to which way the wind's blowing on that front, as far as you can deduce.
Clear as mud from the governor's office on that, but he's not been the major player on this. This really has been a legislative issue.
All right. We'll leave it there. As always, Ed, we appreciate your insight. Look forward to hearing from you next week. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit wfyi.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.